Hour number two, The Glass in the Afternoon radio program. News Sports Talk 98.7 AM 1370 and WGCLRadio.com. Wherever you are listening today, can you send some sunshine our way? We've been so nice here over the last few months that we always implore. Hopefully it's as nice wherever you're listening as it is here. Not today, my friends. The Taco Bell weather puddle activity. Almost a two-month drought. It's not going to be fixed today. We had some showers earlier, but today it's just had a very steady rain, Keith.
That's right.
And no temperature to go along with it that's very comfortable either. So it is a preview of perhaps what's to come here in the final few days and weeks and months of 2020. Here we are on the 15th day of October, 49 downtown. Light rain moving through the area. And if that's not enough for you, there is a freeze warning for tonight.
Good.
I've already read it once.
Yes.
You're going to have to tune in earlier if you want to get to the comedic part of it. Uh-huh. But just about everybody will be paying attention to the freeze warning. I told you it was going to get a little bit warmer. It might after the rain stops, and we're talking a couple of degrees, not much. And then obviously we are going to turn for the opposite direction later tonight. 32 is the forecast low. 26 is the all-time record, just to put this in perspective for you. And all of you folks that have toughed it out and just haven't turned your heat on yet, well, tonight will be the final test to see if you can take it. Tomorrow, sunshine and sunny. That's redundant.
That's nice.
60. And 35 tomorrow night. So if you're heading to, North, hosting Southport, that's our game of the week for you. You probably need to layer up once the sun goes down. It'll be a little chilly. The South Panthers are heading to Ellettsville tomorrow night.
All right, now say that again because Bloomington South
is heading to Ellettsville. Because Edgewood is playing at Brown County, so that means there's an open field on the northwest side of the county.
But why does South have to go there? Electricity?
Something zapped over there, and their lights will not be working. So I saw that from Jim Gordillo in the HT earlier today. South is back playing football this week after a week off for COVID. They will host Chittard at Ellettsville because it's 2020. Why the hell not? There you go. That makes sense. Now, it's not going to be as warm tomorrow as we'd like, but on Saturday it will be pushing 70. More sunshine, only a low of 50 on Saturday, and then 63 and 43 with a 50-50 chance of showers. If you're wondering, is it going to be warm again? The answer is yes. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of next week, all in the 70s. Updated forecasts, live radar. Find it all at WGCLRadio.com. Every Thursday, Keith, we sashay over to City Hall, the deputy mayor's office. We kick down the door, and look who's there. It's Mick Renhuizen, the deputy mayor. He Zooms with us this afternoon. Hello, Mick. How are you?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm doing well. I'm actually kind of glad to see the rain. You actually have the Taco Bell puddle, I assume, that's emerged again next to your station. And boy, we needed the rain, even though it's not going to solve the shortage of 4 inches we've had. We'll take it. We'll take something.
We'll take a little bit, at least just to get the dust off. And if your leaves haven't fallen yet, well, they will they will start falling. And we'll just start right there, Mick, to keep it simple. The leaf pickup process, just give us the thumbnail sketch and where people can get more information, because I know that will be top of mind more after this weekend than perhaps it was a week or two ago.
Yeah, that is the season where we are beginning to ramp up for leaf collection. I would point out two things. One, we should have information about your pickup area, your zone, when we think we'll be there on the city's website, bloomington.in.gov, and you can go to the Public Works page to find out those zone maps and when we anticipate being there. Remember, that's sort of weather contingent, and so we'll be shifting the schedule in real time as conditions change, and that may mean if we happen to get snow during the course of leaf pickup season, that's also the same crews that have to take the vacuums off the trucks and put the snow plows on and go out and do that work. Now that's unlikely at the beginning of the season, so you know it's later on in the schedule that can cause some complications. The second thing I wanted to mention is we are doing an innovative project with leafing, and we're doing a pilot program in a couple of neighborhoods. And actually our innovation crew, led by our innovation director, Dave Takid, and a group of city staff from a number of departments that have been trained in the Bloomberg process of going about public engagement, have been meeting with residents, getting ideas, narrowing those ideas down. And we've got two neighborhoods, Spicewood and Park Ridge East, that are participating in a pilot program. And that means that we'll be trying new methodologies for notifying residents of leaf pickups, changing some of the ways we pick up things and some of the ideas that have been generated. I don't know the final list yet of what those exactly are, but when we do have that ready, I will certainly let you guys know so the public can hear some of the new ways we're trying the leaf pickup program. And the goals of this were sort of twofold. There's a lot of energy consumption and CO2 released in our leaf vacuuming program. And, you know, we're a sustainable community. We like to think of ways we can minimize that impact. So we're looking for ways to reduce our carbon footprint. It's a very costly program to do the leaf suction with the staff and the equipment. The energy use we talked about, and then obviously those leaves have to be taken to either a landfill or a place where they can be used for compost. We choose to take them to those sites where possible. And so we're just looking for different ways to do this process, maybe save a little money for the taxpayer and at the same time make the process better for our residents. So that's a pilot program that we'll have more information in the coming weeks about what it entails, what are some of the new methodologies we're going to try, and then obviously we'll share results after that.
Mick, let me ask you a question about something else that was seasonal. We always had the fall softball, those kinds of things. What's the status because of COVID and all those other things that came into play with what happened to softball for the fall? What happens to basketball coming up? Those things.
Well, modifications for sure. We actually did not have any spring or summer team sports of any kind outside. That was obviously in the very beginning stages of COVID-19 and the stages that the state were in. And of course the county and the city have been more restricted than the state, generally speaking, and remain that way. So that's limited a lot of those team sport activities. They can be conducted. We're obviously seeing college football and NFL football now and professional soccer. We're about to, first basketball practice was yesterday. So those things can be conducted with some protocols in place. I actually don't know all of the youth league things that we're doing, for example, at the youth basketball program at Twin Lakes, but those leagues are going on, again, with some separation. We did open the ice arena. It's opening for private use being rentals from groups like figure skating clubs and hockey teams, again, with restrictions. So the protocols are in place. They've been vetted with public health department. And I just don't have all the details about what they are because they vary for each venue. They can be different for an indoor venue versus an outdoor venue. Obviously, you can't wear masks in all of those scenes. We're not going to see IU basketball players wearing masks while they participate. So you're not going to see kids in U sports wear them. But we have to keep some physical distancing. And that mostly is going to happen where crowds interface, where parents and groups interface. Obviously, on a court, you're not going to be able to keep physical distance and guard your person that you're supposed to be guarding. So I'll have to get more detail and let you know, but those leagues are being done with modifications.
Everything's modified, Mick. It's 2020. There's nothing that's just normal. So we'll just kind of stay flexible, make sure we stretch before any occasions because you have to be. And that's how things are moving along these days. Where are we on the farmer's market? Where are we on the Tuesday market? The holiday market's around the corner somewhere. Help me out.
Well, one of those three is happening, and the Tuesday market's finished for the season.
Gotcha.
The regular Saturday market is, you asked me, I think, the last couple of weeks about our attendance there, and it remains at way more in-person visiting lately, closer to the 1,600 folks visiting in person, and the orders online are down to under 100. A week, whereas that number would have been much different earlier on in COVID, but people are more comfortable, coming physically to the market, maintaining their physical distance, doing their shopping, coming in one path and going out another to keep from intersecting with other people. So that seems to be working well with a regular, steady patron group of somewhere in the 1,600 a week. Holiday market's not going to happen this year, and that's basically because that event is more festival-like, and it encourages close proximity to a lot of the exhibits and things that would go on there. And that's just simply not something we can modify well to have that happen this season.
Mick, let me remind the people that they're listening to Mick Renneisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. And Mick, we know what we had when we started with IU early in the fall. Now they're going to go just before Thanksgiving, and they're not coming back until after January. Have you had conversations? Has the city been talking about what are they going to do? Because there are some concerns that everyone's going someplace else, and they're all going to be coming back, and they could be bringing things back with them.
Well, we certainly have a regular dialogue with our counterparts at the university, with County Health, and with IU Health about all these considerations. And of course, the mayor updates the community along with those other groups every Friday. So tomorrow you'll hear some of the updates from those groups respectively. And of course, with the university, as you mentioned, Keith, closing down for in-person classes after Thanksgiving and not returning till February, that's sort of a little bit of a, it sounds like 40,000 kids are going to leave our community. The truth is, and I'm making up this number, I don't know the exact percentage, but if there's 42,000 some odd students that we saw enrolled, and we've seen the apartments really did fill back up to capacity in the off student campus market. So where we thought that the apartment complexes might lose tenants, that has not been the case. They're in the high 90% occupancy. The dorms did reduce their capacity to half. So if there were about 12,000 kids that lived on campus, maybe there's 6,000. So that means the other 36,000 are living elsewhere in the community or commuting from other places, because you can obviously take a lot of your courses online. So we think that a lot of the students that are renting places in Bloomington may go back home for the holidays for part of it, but probably not for that entire period of time, right? And that means we may not see a mass exodus from our community. What does that mean? As long as people are doing what they're doing now, look, Bloomington, Monroe County numbers are really good. They're stabilized. They're lower than the state's. The mask wearing and the physical distancing and the hand washing and the watch who you're around, don't go to large gatherings. That's all working. So as long as people continue to practice that, if they leave and come back, they should be okay, right? So I don't think we're going to see a mass tens of thousands of students leave. They may leave for a while, go home, see their parents and friends at their respective homes for a little while and come back. But as long as they return and still follow the same things we're going to expect of them in our community, I think that's okay because it's working.
Well, yeah, and the other good news, Mick, is they're required to get flu shots. So that's something that will help. On top of all that, we should all have flu shots, obviously, but all the students and all the faculty and all the staff have to get them. Chuck Carney told me, got to do it by December 1st. So that's part of it. And speaking of testing sites, we're starting to learn a little bit more and a little bit more about, we could have two open. You gave us some breaking news last week. Any added details on who's going to operate this, where the money comes from? It's grants. It's really a collaborative effort. That's the picture Marty Hawk painted yesterday.
It is a collaborative effort, and that's great. And there are going to be some overlap with the Optum site, which I believe is staying open to November. That's the Armory. And so there will be two sites for a while where there's overlap until the Optimum Armory site closes down sometime later in November. The collaborative effort's great. It's the county and the city and the university and IU Health, just the same group that we've talked about that meets weekly, and all of them are putting some dollars into it or in-kind services from IU Health. And other contributions from IU Health, along with city county dollars. Most of the municipalities, can't speak for the university, I think their dollars can't come from the CARES Act, are coming from the CARES Act reimbursements that city government state is coming down from the state to us and also to the county. So that's a great partnership. And what it means is we're going to have way more capacity for testing for a couple of months, because the new site and on Morton Street, and I can't remember the name of the company that was contracted by the county, but it's not Optum. It's a different provider. They'll be able to do 200 tests a day, and the Optum site at the Armory is doing about 125. So for a while, we'll have the capacity to do over 300 tests a day.
And the more the merrier, and obviously the more tests we're doing, the more cases we're finding. But that's why we need to have these tests, so people can figure out if they have it, because it still seems, Mick, another record today. that we have it. Medix is the company, I believe, that you were trying to refer to.
As I do want to correct myself, as my parks director said, we actually are having the holiday market, but it's all outside. The difference is we had some inside components. Those won't happen.
Sure.
But the event will happen on November 28th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the parking lot in the plaza. So just outside this year, not the combination of inside and outside. So those of you who are listening, my apologies. The holiday market will happen. Just a little modification there.
Mick, is that the one where the tuba Santas and all that showed up?
That is what is normally going on there.
Because okay. I was going to ask you what about that, but it's the same thing. Okay.
It's the same event. Uh-huh. How many of those things will be happening? I'll get more intel and speak from a knowledgeable base next week so that we have that information. And
what show are you going to go on to do that, Mick?
Yeah. When am I going to get knowledgeable? Is that the underlying question?
Well, we think you do just great. And there's only been 23 perfect games in the history of baseball. 23. And baseball's been around since 1870. 23. Right. So we don't expect perfect anything around here. Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor, does a great job with us. Every Thursday just after 4:05, Keith, what else is happening?
Well, after that setup, Mick, you don't have to worry about
well, I can
he's
say
not
what I
perfect.
Want now, right?
We know that. Okay. Hey, last night, city council meeting, final work on the budget. What can you tell us, and what do people need to know?
Well, the city budget did pass last night by a vote of 7-1. There was one Councilmember Volin, who was unable to attend. And so, you know, obviously the vote 2 weeks ago, the straw vote, was not a majority in favor. So we're very pleased that the city's budget did pass. There were a couple of amendments. One was kind of a clerical thing that had to be fixed in one of the salary ordinances. It's not even worth mentioning. There are occasionally some corrections that have to be made to those. The substantive one, or the one that probably, well, I know the most discussion was about, was proffered by a couple of council members who wanted to basically remove the perceived cap of 100 officers and say that it's 105, which is what it had been the year before. But I think, as the community knows, the mayor had proposed that we repurpose 5 of the officer positions and use the funds from that to hire 2 social workers, 2 more neighborhood resource officers, and a data analyst. And therefore those dollars would be repurposed, but the officer count really wasn't going to change. The council members really wanted to have that number back into the in the budget discussion and in the budget, and let the rest of the officers in the force know that they supported that if we could somehow get to 105, which has been very difficult. We've not ever been at 105 since we've been authorized to do it. We typically are somewhere in the 95 to 98 range of the 105 that were authorized in this year's budget, for example. And that's due to normal attrition. Officers retire, officers leave and go elsewhere. Some do other jobs in other communities, sometimes different jobs outside of law enforcement. But in an officer base of 100 or more, you're going to have some attrition in the 10 to 12%, which is 10 to 12 officers or more a year. So given that there's that ebb and flow, what this ordinance that passed last night essentially does, and the mayor agreed with this, we did not object to this at all, is that the chief of police has budgeted funds for 100 officers. We're at 98 right now, just as a comparison. If he knows, for example, that a couple of officers are going to retire in a couple of months and he can hire somebody else. It doesn't have to go through the academy. This would be an officer transferring in that's already trained and can be put out on patrol and not have to go through the police academy. Those spots are very hard to get, which is one of the reasons why it's challenging to keep our numbers up. Then we may be at 102 for a while, but over the course of the year, that's probably going to go under 100, back over 100, and back and forth. And the dollar amount will then be what really restricts the number of officers we have, more than actually the headcount. So I hope that makes sense. It was done to support our police department. And again, the council did authorize and approve that amendment. And pretty much once that was removed, the only other discussion point that we had that didn't really change anything was the location of the transportation demand manager position that we've included in the budget proposal this year. And while some council members wanted to see that in a different department, there was not a majority of them that did. So the administration chose to leave it where we thought it should be, which is in the Economic and Sustainable Development Department, and recognize that, hey, if we don't make the position work in the department that we put it in, it doesn't produce results, well, then the council has every right to hold us accountable next year and tell us that didn't work. So those were the two main points that had been discussed over the last couple of weeks, and that's how they were resolved last night with a 7-1 positive vote. So from here, the budget goes to the Department of Local Government Finance for final approval at the state. That's typical, happens every year. And then our budget year is actually a January 1 to December 31. So the new funds and the new position and a half that was allocated for next year would be able to be hired in January.
Vic, let me ask you one other thing, because we see this happen every year. At the end of the year, every department has the budget, and sometimes they have a little money left over. What's the process for the money that wasn't spent that was budgeted for?
Yeah, those are called in government lingo, those are called reversions. That means that the dollars that you did not spend revert to the fund from which they came, which in our case is mostly the general fund, which is the tax-based fund, property taxes, and that fund most of city operations. So if you don't use them, they go back into the general fund, and you have to ask council for permission to repurpose them next year. The city typically reverts somewhere in the $1 million to $3 or $4 million a year range. That helps us keep our cash balances up and our reserves in a good position. In recent years, we've said to department heads to encourage them to save money at the end of the year. If you don't spend all your money, you don't need it, we will let you repurpose 50% of it next year for things you couldn't have planned for when we developed our budget. And so we don't know if we're going to do that next year, but right now the departments are assembling their reversion lists to see how much money might be left at the end of the year. And that's the phase we're in at the moment.
Mick Renheisen's the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. He joins us every Thursday just after 4:05. And Mick, we saw some news. The old, it's escaped my Timber Ridge. And what's the other one over there? Another big old development's happening. We've seen the one, Keith. I don't know if you've driven down Walnut Street, almost to Denny's, where the Motel 6 was.
Thing's coming up fast.
That's gangbusters. Right. Why can't I think of the other place? Timber Ridge, and what's the other? 14th, and it's 14th in Indiana, and
where they're taking down the
Brownstone Terrace. My goodness, I had to go through the Rolodex there for a minute. Is this going to be similar to what we saw behind 17th and Dunn at the convenient food mart? Are we looking at one of these type projects, Mick? Does the city have any say in what goes where and how and everything else?
Oh, we absolutely have say. All those have to go through the planning process for approval and be approved by the plan commission and the city council, depending on what kind of a project it is. So the Brownstone Terrace area, to make the rest of you listening familiar, if you're not familiar with it, basically if you're going north on College, and you get to the corner of where the CVS is on 14th Street, and you look to the east or the right, if you're going north on College, that starts right there. It just starts a little bit off that block, and it goes all the way up to Indiana Avenue.
And then it goes south to the train tracks, right?
And it goes south to the train tracks. So it's several blocks long. It's a big development. It was built back, I believe it was there when I was a student in the 70s. So, you know, those kind of time frames for those apartment projects, it's about time for something to have been done to it. So it's going to be torn down and rebuilt to the current Unified Development Ordinance standards. It will not be the high rise that you saw in the example you gave Evolve over on 17th across from the football stadium. The footprint's different. It's more long and linear than square and blocked like the other property was. It will increase the number of bedrooms and units substantially. I forget what number they have now, but the new number is going to be over 1,000 bedrooms. And this is the area zoned, or where we believe it should be zoned, for student housing, because it's close to the bus line. It's close to campus. You can walk, get on the bus line, and get to your classes, get to the athletic facilities, and so forth.
And it's been student housing forever. Why change it now?
Right. It's just going to replace old product that needs to be replaced. Yes, it's going to get bigger, but that's where students ought to live, we think. In areas like that, is where students already live. We think the product should be rebuilt to newer standards. I also believe these kind of projects, when people go, oh, we're just building student housing. So every time student housing gets built, something else opens up in the community that was student housing. ostensibly, it creates more supply. Supply creates more affordability. So people are complaining about our housing prices. Well, the more supply we have, the more competitive the market rates can be, and therefore the more competitive rent rates can be. And we hope that some of that product turns over into more affordable units that maybe won't be student rentals anymore, not necessarily here in this Brownstone Terrace area, but other students will move in there when it's nice and new and shiny and there's more capacity, and they'll have to leave somewhere, rental houses in Bloomington that maybe can turn back over to owner-occupied. So that ripple effect is something that happens when bigger housing student development projects happen as well.
Mick, in the area of redevelopment, has the city got a position on the redevelopment area of Players Pub?
That's a historical deal, isn't it?
Well, historical.
That is where it is at the moment. Right. And so, you know, I think our city administration's belief is there are certainly some historic product in Bloomington that needs to be preserved for the fabric and history of our community. The delicate part is, you know, how do you draw that line? How do you figure that out? And that's why we have a historic preservation commission and a staff person that advises them and, you know, is educated in that kind of things. And we have some really smart community members who are as well. So that one's still going through the process. I think the last vote the Historic Preservation Commission made will now forward their recommendation, which was kind of split, but I think slightly in favor of designating it, goes to the City Council for their final determination.
And that process, I'm not going to get into that today. We're running out of time. Time to torture us with trivia, shall we?
Oh, boy.
Let's do that. And we thought we'd take, this is a little bit of a shift in our trivia themes, right?
Jeez, maybe it's harder.
Let me get my pencil.
Well, it might be. Celeste, I said, well, what do you think we've been putting together? You know, at the end of the year, we always put together lists of things that have gone on in the city, and we kind of kept this running tab since Mayor Hamilton's administration started. And, you know, it's kind of our list of, well, what have we gotten done versus what we said we would do, accomplishments, if you will, things that are happening throughout. And we thought this would be a way to kind of not so much tout our horn, because these things are our community benefit driven, but rather to educate our public about what your city government is doing and you know, what kind of successes and not always successes. Sometimes things don't work out like planned, but just to give you a little bit of feedback about things that we've collected in terms of data points. So with that little introduction, here's your first theme, and it's about sustainability. What kind of sustainability efforts has the Mayor Hamilton administration been underway, and what can we say has been accomplished in that area? So your first question is, how many tons of compost were collected at city facilities
Boo.
Over 2019?
Boo.
Compost collected over the course of 2019. Is it 35 tons, 45 tons, 43 tons, or 53 tons?
Well, Keith, I don't have a single there's not even one number of the four that sticks out. You say, okay, we can get rid of that one.
We're proud collectors, so I'm going with 53.
You know what? Yes. We turn a lot of it into a lot of it. So let's go deep, baby. 53 for both of us.
See, you guys are really good. You still, without much way to really pick one of the four things, you got it right. You got the biggest number. It's 53.
Boy,
and it
Keith,
is correct that there are 53 tons of compost were collected in 2019.
That little late ball thing really helps.
Are we leading the league in composting, Mick? Is there like a scoreboard we look at for other communities and say, hey, well, I guess if you have more people, you could do it. Well, we're doing great.
Percent of diverted recyclables.
There you go.
Per capita.
Not one of the questions today, but we'll get that one on there. So just as a reference point, this was 8 more tons than were collected in 2018. So, wow. You know, a little over 20% increase in tons collected of compost. That's good. We're moving in
Way
the right
go,
direction.
Bloomington.
There you go. And you both are one for one.
Good.
Second question. How many homes have access to solar power generation?
Both of them. How many homes? Oh, no, Keith, we have to guess another number.
Due to the Solarize Bloomington program, how many homes have access to solar power generation due to the Solarize Bloomington program, which obviously in the last couple of years have been a big initiative because of net metering and the changes in the state law. So a lot of this happened in the last couple of years. So your choices are, is it 120 homes, 270, 350, 250?
I learned from Keith last time. I think we do a good job with this. And you had to get your, you had to buy these panels at a certain time or the discount ran out.
Right.
I'm guessing 300 and change, because once you get in there and get after it, again, we're pretty hyper intense about being sustainable. So I'm going with the largest number you have provided, Mick.
I'm going with 250.
Why 250? Just to be difficult?
Yeah.
Just to be right. He's right.
God, how is that possible?
Well, because he mentioned it after he'd... See, he went in an order, and then that one was kind of an out of order.
Well, I tell you what, we have theories, Mick. Lots and lots of theories on how this
works. His theory worked on this one. He is correct. 250 homes represent 1.2 megawatts of energy capacity. And by the way, and this is not something I have an exact statistic on, but I've learned that Bloomington's per capita solar energy generation is the highest in the state. Shouldn't surprise anybody.
Really?
Bravo.
Good job.
You know what? You know what, Mick? Not today. Look outside. It's not happening.
Yeah. Well, not today.
We're off. We're taking a day off.
Until today.
Those panels are worn out.
Turn on the heater.
They need a little vacation, just like the MCCSC. Question number three. Keith is on a perfect game. I am a 500, which sounds great in baseball, but in anything else, not very good.
Which environmentally aware grant did Bloomington become the only Indiana city to win in 2019? Was it A, a green space grant, B, an open field grant, C, a low-no emissions grant, or D, a veggie-friendly grant?
I know this one, I think. And by the way, just for the record, since we are on the record here, 2019 was a long time ago, Mick.
It feels like
about
it was 10, really
about 10 and a half months ago, we would have gotten that question right. I'm going to say C, a low emission, whatever that is.
Give it to me one more time.
Green space grant, open field grant, low-no emissions grant, that's class's answer, or D, a veggie-friendly grant.
I'm torn between the open field and the veggie.
What open fields do we have?
Well, that,
well you're probably right,
more,
so go ahead and say it. Hell, you haven't missed one yet.
I'll go open field.
Well, your partner caught up with you and got this one right. The low no emissions grant is the correct answer. And that grant was used to buy a second electric battery bus
for the transit
fleet. Yep. So we also, Director Lou May, very successful in getting these grants recently without... This particular grant got more funds for two new electric battery buses this year. So our electric battery bus fleet is increasing in size every year.
We had some open fields too, I noticed.
Only wish that our ridership would come back to the pre-COVID levels, but not right now. So we'll hopefully get back to that sooner than later.
Well, Mick, we appreciate your socially distanced, physically distanced interviewing here on the Zoom platform. Awesome job as always. We just continue to
you
wear
didn't
our
discuss
masks.
His golf course. You didn't say anything about golf
today. No, we didn't do golf today because I think we're 1 month from the Masters today, Mick. So that can't be right, is it? When is the Masters? Is it 1 month from today?
November 12th through the 15th.
Okay, today is the 15th of October, so well, this would be Masters week next month. I got what we're saying here. One, two, three. Yes, the Masters will start 4 weeks from today. You can call that a month. I don't know what Celeste will call it, but we'll call it a month, and we'll move on. We'll talk golf next week. They're at the CJ Cup at Shadow Creek, a very exclusive club in Las Vegas. I've never played here before, so we will not bore our listeners with golf talk. And we'll do that next week when they move to Sherwood Country Club in Los Angeles for another moved tournament. No Asian Swing this year because of travel. No going to South Korea, no going to Japan, no going to Shanghai. So they're going to do two of the three events here in the good old U.S. of A. And then the World Golf Championship, HSBC Champions, will not be played this year. Everybody's taking a hit one way or another. But not you. You'll join us next week, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Take care,
Mick. Mick Renheisen, with help from Celeste. We always have a good time with the crew from the city of Bloomington. Mick joins us every Thursday just after 4:05. I thought you were going to throw the perfect game there, Keith. A turkey.
No,
that's what they call it in bowling. You know, you get out three strikes in
that's
a row.
Right.
Turkey, hat trick, whatever. But I thought it was the bus thing. I thought clean and doing all that was the bus. But I screwed up the first one. You got that one right. You bailed me out there. And what was the second one that you went for two? Oh, you guessed the number 250 because it was out of order.
Out of order.
That's it. Now we're cracking the code. This is the what's that one book that was really popular that Baldacci wrote about I'm losing my mind here. We're cracking the code. What was that book called? About the Vatican. You remember where that? The Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci Code.
There you go.
Right, okay.
Sorry. Usually it doesn't take that long.
Vatican and Da Vinci, we got it.
Close.
Yeah.
It's all
you got it.
It's all Italian to us.